for you, because the news is personal and your support is essential. Donate to this station today, and thank you.
Go to wjffradio.org.
Speaking of saying thank you, we've got some listeners to thank here. This is Radio Catskill. It's WJFF Jeffersonville. We're getting ready for the local edition, which tonight features the monthly Kingfisher Project. And in the studio with us is Bill Williams of the Kingfisher Project. Bill, welcome back to welcome to your show.
Well, thanks, Jason.
And also Bill's here because he has a generous challenge from the Where There's a Will Fund, or maybe I should say he had a generous challenge, because we have heard from one more listener, and this is Daniel in Forestburg. So thank you to Daniel, if you want to ring the bell for Daniel. All right. And now and Daniel says shout out to Ronald and Zachary Kelson. So thank you. Shouting out, and Ronald was here with us. Oh, I think you missed Ronald today, but he was on air with us in the beginning.
I heard him on your way in.
Yeah. So with that, thanks to Daniel, as well as our first anonymous donor, and Leah and Lisa, also Patricia. All those five folks chipped in together and raised more than $300. So we met your challenge, Bill.
That's terrific. Let's keep it going. Maybe we can find a way to up the challenge or something. Yeah.
Hit
the ball not only out of the park, but over the park.
The bigger challenge yet remains, which is thanks to all the activity we've had here today, we are now at 17% of our overall goal. We've raised, we're closing in on $10,000. We may be very close to $10,000, actually. It's just that the donations that we've gotten have not gone onto the list yet. So, anyway, the bigger challenge, what I'm trying to say, is we still have to raise $55,000. So we still have another $45,000 in change left to go. So there's plenty of opportunity for you to help us if you want, and do it during the Kingfisher Project.
Yeah, you can listen and learn and do it online all at one time. Yeah. WJFFradio.org. Make a donation and hear what we have to say on the Kingfisher Project tonight.
And you can go to WJFFradio.org or also call us here at 845-482-4141. So thanks again. Let's just ring the bell one more time for everybody that donated. So we made that challenge, and yet we still do need to keep this going. And that's why Bill is here tonight, to help us introduce tonight's guest. But before we move on to tonight's show, Bill, just tell us, just remind the listener a little bit about the Where There's a Will Fund and what you do and why.
Well, the fund was started, we lost my son William in December of 2012, and we started a fund in his name to help educate people, to help people find recovery resources, and to eliminate the stigma around addiction. And that's what we do. We find different places, different organizations that can use the support and direct money from the fund toward those organizations, and certainly one is Radio Catskill.
Do you feel comfortable maybe giving a couple examples, some of the other organizations besides Radio Catskill?
One was our guest last month, Community in Crisis in New Jersey, and we've had Big Vision with Eve Goldberg, who's been in New York City, who's been a guest. I'm trying to think if there are any of these. There's also Friends of Recovery New York, and we've had guests on from Friends of Recovery New York. But we try to find, and we've also had several guests on from the Partnership to End Addiction, and we make donations to them when we feel it's appropriate.
All right. Well, I thank you for the good work that you're doing in the community, but more than ever, I thank you for the good work that you're doing right here at Radio Catskill with the Kingfisher Project. I'm not going to ask you to tell us who the guest is, because you're actually about to do that here in just a moment. So all I'm going to ask you to do is just remind people one more time where they can go to donate while listening to the Kingfisher Project.
Well, if you're donating while you're listening, go to WJFFradio.org. And if you need to call 845-482-4141.
845-482-4141.
Welcome to the Kingfisher Project.
information and awareness about the heroin and opiate epidemic. I'm Julie Pizzol. The Kingfisher Project began in memory of my daughter, Rebecca Jean Pizzol, who was shot and killed due to her heroin addiction. At her memorial service, her former teacher, Mr. Okazalik, read an essay she wrote. It was about a bird, an injured kingfisher bird that she found and rescued when everyone else had given up on the bird. In that spirit, our community came together and formed the Kingfisher Project. Since 2014, we have been raising awareness about the drug and opiate crisis in our listening area and around the country, right here on Radio Catskill. Here is Bill Williams.
Arthur Robin Williams is an associate professor of clinical psychiatry at Columbia University's Division on Substance Use Disorders and a research scientist at the New York State Psychiatric Institute. He attended Princeton University's Woodrow Wilson School of Public Health and International Affairs for his undergraduate degree in domestic health policy, and he completed his medical degree at the University of Pennsylvania, where he also earned a master's in bioethics. Dr. Williams is also the chief medical officer and a co-designer for Ophelia Health, telehealth provider for people with substance use disorder. Welcome, Robin.
Thank you for having me.
Right off the top, I should say, lest there be any confusion, that we share the same last name. Robin and I are not related.
That's a good point. Yes.
I have a quote here. I think it's taken from an article that might have been in the New York Times. I'm not sure. But it says, Dr. Williams, the medical director, said, "When I first heard about Ophelia, I was terrified. I thought the idea was ludicrous. He worried about doing proper clinical management over video." Could you tell us a little bit about Ophelia, what it is? And then I'd like to get the timeline squared away, in my mind at least.
Yeah, happy to. So some context here is that if you think back, it can be a little bit hard to think back pre-COVID in terms of how everything operated now that it's been 5 years. But in the teens, I guess you could say, 2015, 17, 19, before COVID, there were some companies that were being formed that were providing often cash pay services, subscription services for various pharmaceuticals. And it raised concern among the psychiatric community that basically you had an algorithm that was overseeing, so to speak, clinical management, where people would fill out forms online and then they'd get mailed all sorts of medications, some of which really do have side effects, even if it's for a small percentage of the population, that can cause significant harm. And yet there is no real oversight. So in 2019, when our founding CEO at Ophelia, Zach Gray, reached out to me and my counterpart, Adam Basaga, who's a clinical trialist, also full-time at Columbia with me, Zach reached out to us because he had a girlfriend who died, who was found dead at work from an overdose. And he was finishing his business school program at Wharton. He's from New York City, went to Columbia for undergraduate, and was at Penn for Wharton, and just couldn't believe how difficult it was to try to find help for her. They had gone to 3 different doctors. 2 of them claimed that they couldn't prescribe buprenorphine. The third one, she didn't feel comfortable disclosing that she'd become addicted to opioids. And so she was buying Suboxone from her dealer because it was easier than getting it from a doctor. It's unbelievable, right? And yet this is something that is commonplace throughout the country. Zach was very motivated to think about how do you create a low threshold treatment program to make treatment convenient and private and discreet and to really get it to so many people who need it. It's probably 80% or so of people, 7 million people with opioid addiction who don't have treatment in a given year. So there's this huge unmet need in the country. And that's why we started Ophelia. And as I started thinking about it, buprenorphine, which is an FDA-approved medication to treat opioid addiction, it's risk protective. You think about other controlled substances, stimulants like Adderall or Ritalin, benzodiazepines like Xanax, they're risk conferring. But buprenorphine saves lives. Every day someone's on buprenorphine, their risk of overdose or death drops by 60, 80%. So it's really a question of how do we get this out into the community, to the people who need it. And telehealth is actually a great platform for doing that, especially for patients who have children, who have jobs, who can't miss work shifts, who don't want to or can't pay gas money to drive across the county, you know, every week or even every day to go to a clinic and sit in a waiting room for 40 minutes and then be seen for 5 minutes and then drive back on the other half of the tank of gas. Telehealth brings the treatment directly to the patient. So the more that we talked through this and what this could look like, and then COVID, you know, sort of blew up all of the regulatory constraints in terms of in-person requirements. And we were able to start 5 years ago treating patients in New York and Pennsylvania. Those were our first two states, without requiring any in-person services. And that's still true to this day. And we've seen over 20,000 patients. It's been very successful.
How did Zach know to reach out to you, other than obviously the fact that you're a psychiatrist?
So Zach found Adam Basaga. He had just published a book, Overcoming Opioid Addiction. And that was on Zach's radar. And he reached out to Adam. Adam looped me in, and we started talking about what the barriers were. You know, why is it that only 20% of people who need treatment are able to get it in a given year in the United States? And it's not just one or two things. It's really a laundry list of barriers that get in the way.
I'm all too well familiar with those barriers. Most everybody that listens to the show knows we lost my son in 2012 to a heroin overdose. So, and we spent probably the prior 2 years trying to jump through all the hurdles that are out there.
Yeah, it's just a tragic story. And I'm sure you're very familiar with this. The study that showed it was something like 30-40% of people in the country have a family member or a close friend who've dealt with this or died from opioid addictions. It's very widespread. And I think we've had a bit of an uncoordinated response. If you think about the drug market right now, the biggest drug dealer in the United States is social media. So it's Instagram and TikTok and Facebook, and that's where people get drugs. And so I think if you want to fix this problem, if you want to address the drug death crisis, you really have to make treatment more accessible than downloading TikTok as an app. You have to get it into people's hands onto their mobile. So our whole treatment platform is very mobile friendly. And that way people are in distress 7 days a week at any point. We don't have to turn the lights on in a brick and mortar setting to be able to help them. We're available, not 24/7, but 7 days a week. Very accessible. I've published a few studies of large samples of buprenorphine patients over the last 10 years. And what has become apparent is that there are some patients, when they enter care, they're already taking buprenorphine. And clearly some of those are care transfers. So they're moving, or they have a change in insurance, or for whatever reason, they want a different prescriber and they come to us. But most of those patients are actually getting buprenorphine from the street. You know, they call it street Suboxone and street bup, or they're getting it sort of unofficially through someone else who has a prescription. And they're seeking relief from addiction. They're trying to treat withdrawal. They're trying to get into a formal treatment program and struggling, you know, wait lists, all of these things. The patients who come into care who are already taking buprenorphine, it's not a surprise, but they retain and care about twice as long as the patients who come in not on buprenorphine. And they have about half the rate of opioid use while they're in care. So they do better. The flip side of that is that we can identify the patients entering care who are more likely to struggle. And we determined that about 20-25% of the patients who enter care with us, and these are disproportionately younger men, actually, so 20s, early 30s, and males, who are actively using street drugs, which these days, as you said, that basically means fentanyl, whether they know that or not. About 80% of our patients test positive for fentanyl, even if they think they're using opioids or benzos or whatnot. And these patients who come in using street drugs who are not on buprenorphine and need an induction to get onto buprenorphine, those are the patients that we're more likely to lose in the first few months of care. And those are the patients we worry the most about. So we created a whole treatment pathway for those patients with a more rigorous combination of medication and counseling to try to treat withdrawal symptoms, try to help with co-occurring psychiatric conditions that may destabilize their early treatment response, to really do everything we can for this sort of higher risk segment of people coming in. But the reason we were able to identify these patients is because within the EHR system, we had it set up in a way where we could characterize the people entering care and figure out who was struggling with early engagement and longer term retention.
You're listening to the Kingfisher Project on the Local Edition. I'm Bill Williams. After the break, more with my guest, Dr. Arthur Robin Williams. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
It's Radio Catskill's Summer Fun Drive. Because the community supports Radio Catskill, we can bring the community local news, emergency info, and great music programs that you won't find anywhere else. Be the next person to support this crucial work. More than ever, we need the generous support of listeners like you. More than ever, we need you to give what you can. Give now at WJFFradio.org.
WJFFradio.org. The number, the website to go to is WJFFradio.org to support us during our summer fun drive, during the Local Edition, during the Kingfisher Project, which happens once a month here, at least on the Local Edition. And that's why these are all good reasons that you should support us now. 845-482-4141. That's the number to call. It's 845-482-4141. I'm Jason Dole, host of the Local Edition, and here with me now, live in the studio, is Bill Williams, host of the Kingfisher Project.
Hey, there,
Bill.
Jason.
So you did this. You had this conversation with the good Dr. Williams, no relation. And but I'm watching. You are intently listening back to it now. You're into it.
Yeah. Well, it's so important what he has to say. There's really. Just like when I prepare for the show, often if I'm talking to somebody who's written a book, I tend to read the book twice because there's so much information. I want to get it down. I want to get it right. I want to be able to help people.
And, you know, he in these interviews, like there's been some recurring themes, you know, there, and I think they speak to some of the clear needs that there are in terms of addressing the issue of addiction now. But, you know, through you, I've learned so much about harm prevention, you know, is a recurring theme that we keep coming
right.
to. And I think that falls under a bigger theme of, you know, how do we as a society approach this issue? Or more pointedly, how are the ways in which we've been approaching it not been working? And what else can we do? That seems to be a big recurring theme of Kingfisher Project.
Yeah, well, slowly, as a society, we're moving ahead, but it's, you know, willpower. I've said willpower needs to be exercised not by the people that are ill, but by the politicians that can actually do something that might help them out.
Yeah, and you see things slowly getting better in terms of how we as a society address this issue overall.
Yes, but the progress is so slow that it's can be disheartening at times. But there is progress.
So I don't know. I don't think you would do this because you've got a degree of humility. But I would say that, you know, the Kingfisher Project and other initiatives like this, community-supported, community-based initiatives to address this issue and have these conversations and get the information out there is part of what's slowly turning this ship in the right direction.
Oh, absolutely. I have more faith in grassroots organizations than I do in government writ large. Grassroots organizations are leading the way and taking the risks and showing us what we need to do.
I'm talking to Bill Williams, who's the host and a producer of the Kingfisher Project right now. We're doing it because we do need your support. We made the generous challenge from Bill and his family's foundation, the Where There's a Will Fund, that they use to support good causes and organizations that are trying to address these issues. 845-482-4141. As Bill says, put us over the top. We made that challenge. Let's make even more now, or people can donate online.
Donate online at wjffradio.org. Let me say that again, wjffradio.org.
I force myself to say it twice because I always say it too fast. So wjffradio.org. It's wjffradio.org, 845-482-4141. I think we still have people here to answer the phones, which we're very fortunate for. We still have another 8 minutes of this conversation, and that doesn't leave us much time, so we better get back to it. But Bill, before we go, I do want to say thank you so much for doing this work. And I will also say thank you so much to Patricio Rubio for making sure that the video for this conversation is up now at YouTube, at Radio Catskills YouTube channel. And also the podcast is on the Kingfisher podcast.
It's up now.
It's up now. That's people can terrific. Go check it out. That's or terrific. You can listen to this last clip that we're going to play right now, talking about another recurring theme we encounter in the Kingfisher Project, which is the problems that we have with insurance companies and getting them to do the right thing.
Yep.
845-482-4141. Support this good, crucial community work. 845-482-4141. Go to wjffradio.org.
It's really shocking, but we routinely are told by public and commercial plans that they have, quote, network adequacy. You know, they say, oh, well, we have enough providers in network. We don't need to add another provider for opioid addiction. And it's just really hard to believe on the surface, given how many people struggle to find treatment. When you dig into the numbers, it's very clear that they're incorrect and they don't have sufficient provider availability. And we know that in part because we have patients who do have insurance coverage, and yet they're choosing to pay cash to us. And I think that's a strong argument that they don't have the option of using their benefits, because if someone can get something for free or low cost, you know, usually that's going to be what they do. We only charge $245 a month is the cash pay fee, which is below market, frankly. And yet patients still choose to pay cash if they can't use their benefits. Your question, though, about how people do and if they retain, what surprised us was that when we looked at the cash pay patients, the ones who had insurance, they were actually more likely to drop out a bit sooner than the people who were uninsured paying cash. And I think that does speak to, over time, people, especially as they stabilize with us and they're doing better and they look around, they can find providers who are in network, but it can take some time to do that. So we think of ourselves early on, 5 years ago, we started as a standalone provider. But now we also function as a supplementary provider where we partner with all sorts of different treatment programs, carceral settings, jails, prisons, but treatment programs, IOPs, group-based programs that don't have a medication or a prescriber available. And then we also think of ourselves as a bit of a safety net. And so we have a bridge clinic that we set up. We have patients who are sent to us. There are various scenarios where they may come to us, and we all know that this is for a few weeks or a month while they're moving or getting set up with a different kind of provider. But in the meantime, we're able as a safety net to continue their buprenorphine prescription until they settle into a long-term program. So there's just a lot of flexibility and adaptiveness to a telehealth-based program because we can operate statewide. We have much more expansive hours. We're not restricted, you know, to 9 to 5 in-person hours. We have evening, weekend services available. And so that allows us to innovate and do all sorts of things that traditional programs would otherwise struggle with.
What drew you to addiction psychiatry?
So I, in high school and college, had worked on various HIV prevention efforts, AIDS awareness campaigns in the U.S. and in developing countries. And I was, as you mentioned, I was in New Jersey, at Princeton for college, and there was a governor race, and we started talking to the presumptive nominee who did wind up becoming governor, because in New Jersey, there was the highest rate, so this was in the early aughts, in the late 90s, the highest rate of mother-to-child transmission of HIV in the country. And, you know, you think about a northeastern state, relatively high income, one of the wealthier states in the country. And it was perplexing. Why would you have this high rate of infant HIV transmission? And it really was because of drug policy. it was because the state disallowed needle exchange programs or syringe service programs, disallowed over-the-counter sales of paraphernalia without a prescription, and it criminalized possession of drug paraphernalia without a prescription. So if someone had needles or syringes, the presumption was that it was for drug use, and so it was criminal. And these were laws across the country that mostly in the coastal states, the Northeast, were passed because of the heroin epidemic in the 60s and 70s. Because of the HIV epidemic, most of those states over the 90s repealed those laws because they realized they were actually creating a lot of harm rather than being protective, which is not a surprise because in general, law enforcement-based approaches to addiction don't improve outcomes. They just send people away to carceral settings. So the long story short was that it was really through HIV prevention efforts that drug policy became a big part of what I was working on, and I knew I wanted to go to medical school. And through training, it became apparent that addiction psychiatry was really the home for me in terms of my interests and the kinds of patient populations I'd been advocating for and working with over the years.
Is there anything else we haven't covered?
Well, you know, one is the promise of injectable buprenorphine. And, you know, we touched on an injectable extended release naltrexone. I think injectable buprenorphine, so the weekly and monthly injections that have come to market, I think that got overshadowed by COVID. And I think we still need to learn where the injectables are most helpful. And there may be some patients when they enter care where the oral sublingual buprenorphine is difficult, whereas a monthly injection gives them a lot of coverage and a lot of protection, you know, for a whole month or longer. And I think the country could be more innovative with federal and state leadership to think about how to make it really easy to access these medications. The injectable buprenorphine is, you know, around $1,200, $1,500 a month or more. But a lot of that cost is actually driven by the reporting system to monitor adverse events. So this gets to the whole question around regulation and these well-intentioned regulations. It's another example where they may actually be driving costs and creating barriers. But the long-acting injectables may be a better fit for some people if that's what their preference is. But we don't really have systems or structures in place to facilitate access to those.
I'm sure you could probably come up with a solution to this. How would you get injectables delivered via telehealth?
Well, what we've done is partnered with the pharmaceutical company that came out with the first monthly injection. They have alternative care sites. They have a whole program where we partner with pharmacies. And so the patient's able to go in the same way you might get a flu shot, go into the pharmacy, and they can get the monthly injection. And that's worked really well for us. So it sounds a bit paradoxical as the telehealth provider that we're able to give injections, but it's through the partnerships with the pharmacy. You know, all of our patients go to the pharmacy anyway. And so it's been a very effective way to do that.
I knew you'd have an answer.
we've been successful doing this in Pennsylvania, and we're hoping to expand it to New York very soon.
That's all the time we have for the Kingfisher Project. My guest has been Dr. Arthur Robin Williams, Associate Professor of Clinical Psychiatry at Columbia University's Division on Substance Use Disorders and a Research Scientist at the New York State Psychiatric Institute. Dr. Williams is also the Chief Medical Officer for Ophelia Health. Thank you, Robin, for all your good work and especially for enlightening us about Ophelia Health today. Having said that and having said goodbye, the most important thing is, how should any of our listeners find you?
Ophelia.com.
That simple.
It is. Okay. And there's a button. You can go on mobile on the computer and schedule an intake within just a few days.
Okay. I'm Bill Williams. Be sure to join me next month for another edition of the Kingfisher Project, Information Against Addiction, right here on Radio Catskill.
Well, thank you so much, Bill Williams. And Bill Williams is here in the studio with me, and I can thank him in person. Bill, we've only got 30 seconds left before we get into the daily, but we're just saying goodbye now. But thank you so much for that great conversation.
Well, thank you. You're quite welcome.
And thank you so much for helping us raise $670 with your generous challenge,
That's
all told.
Great.
Thank you so much.
That's great.
So thank you to everybody that supported Radio Catskill during the Kingfisher Project and during All Things Considered. And if you aren't one of those folks, if you aren't one of the 51 people who have donated so far, actually it's closer to 56 right now, if you haven't donated yet, we need to hear from you now. So be the next person to reach out to us.
You can reach out at 845-482-4141 or online at jffradio.org. Let me try that again.